Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Ayin Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material access by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Aleph. Before we begin the shiur, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. The topic heading says, Shtei Gishot, two approaches, Lahasbir HaPosuk, to explain the Posuk V'yoshav Mitzarev Metar Kesef. The first approach, Loshon Havdola. Metar is to separate the positive from the negative, the silver from the dross. The second approach, Loshon Hachshora, Metaher, is to machshir, to make something kosher. It's almost the opposite approach, where in the first approach, we're separating dross. In other words, we're acknowledging the presence of that which is unfit and separating it from that which is fit, that which is desirable. In the case of Hachshora, you're taking everything, even that which is unfit, and including it together with that which is fit. So in that sense, you have almost an opposite approach to the same word. In our previous year, we dealt with the first approach to the Pasuk in the sense, or in the case of the Almighty, when He comes in the future to purify the different tribes, the tribe of Levi will be purified first, and in purification, we say that the Almighty will separate the undesirable, the unfit from the fit, or the qualified from the unqualified, or the disqualified. We continue on the fourth line from the top, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kesef Metaher Mamzerim. Rashi, on the top line, Kesef Metar Mamzerim, Ha Mitumoim. Mitumoim, Tomu'ah, is something that's buried in or hidden in, that's become absorbed within. So, Kesef, money, will Metahir Mamzerim, Ha Mitumoim, Be Yisrael, Machmas Mamoinom. Because of their wealth, so they are not noted, they're not separated, they're powerful, and the general population, because of their power, will accept them within the general community and not protest, not separate them, not vilify them. For who gorein lahem shitaru, this actually causes them to be accepted. In the future, the Almighty isn't going to separate them away. Because of the extensive, we'll say, marriage within the kosher Jewish community, there are so many mamzerim that have already become absorbed, and the standard observer can't discern them from the rest of the population. Only the Almighty would be able to do that, and since they've become absorbed within the general community, that's it. They remain as part of the general community. And that's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's approach to the very same pasuk we cited in our previous year. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that Kesef Metar Mamzerim Shenemar V'Yoshav Mitzorev U'Metar Kesef. And we continue with the Rashi Shenemar V'Yoshav Mitzorev U'Metar Kesef. Rashi continues and says Oysom Shenitmu Machmas Oshram, those that became absorbed because of their wealth, V'seifei dekra v'hoyu l'Hashem agishe mincha b'tzdaka tzidkasa shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu hi, the righteousness of the Almighty God is she'eino mavdilam, that He doesn't separate them, ela hayol shenitmeru nitmu, once they've become absorbed, they have become absorbed. Now, we continue in the Gemara. My magishe mincha b'tzdaka, that's the end of that pasuk. What does it mean? Omar Rabbi Yitzchak Tzedakah, Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, the Almighty has done a righteous act for the Jewish people, Shemishpacha Shenitma'ah, Nitma'ah, a family that's become absorbed, remains absorbed and not separated out. Gufa, Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. We had mentioned this in our previous shiur, and here the Gemara focuses on Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel's teaching, Kol Arotzos Isa L'Eretz Yisrael, V'Eretz Yisrael Isa L'Bovel. All nations, all lands, nations of the world are like dough relative to Eretz Yisrael. Dough is that which is mixed. Different ingredients are mixed in together. We'll say in our discussion, dough represents the opposite of purity. So all the nations are mixed in with psulim, with ksherim, the pure pedigree, with those of problematic pedigree, and hence all nations are mixed together, pure with the impure, relative to Eretz Yisrael, which is pure relative to the other lands. Eretz Yisrael, Yisrael above all, and Eretz Yisrael itself is like dough relative to Bovel. So the purest area, genealogically, in a pedigree sense, is Bovel. As we discussed in our previous Shiurim, as a result of Ezra leaving Bovel, he wanted to make sure that he left behind a community where there would be no marriage problems resulting from the pure mixing with the impure. Bimei Rebbe, we have a new marking, so before we go further, let's note it on the sign under the Nosei / Mivne heading, the Nosei being the topic heading combined here with a structural note. The trapezoid or volcano shape that you see are Nisyonos attempts L'kibaya Bovel ki'isa l'umas Eretz Yisrael, to switch the tables around and declare Bovel being like Isa, pure mixed with the impure, versus Eretz Yisrael completely pure. So in the times of Rebbe, and is it not Rebbe himself, as you'll see very shortly, but in his generation, they wanted to make Bovel, Bikshu l'asas Bovel Isa l'Eretz Yisrael. Rashi says, "Bikshu l'asas Bovel Isa l'hachzik mishpachus Eretz Yisrael miyuchasos." To declare the families of the land of Israel as being pure pedigree, and to scrutinize families of Bovel, anyone coming from Bovel, we would scrutinize their family before allowing a marriage to take place with them. Before marrying a woman from Bovel, we would want to make sure of her pureness of pedigree. Rebbe was a descendant from Hillel HaBavli. Hillel, that is Rebbe's roots, his family roots were in Bovel. So Omar Lohem, Rebbe says to his surrounding colleagues, Kaitzim Atem Mesimim Li Bein Einai, you're putting thorns between my eyes. Would you like Rabbi Chanina to answer you, to respond to you? So Rabbi Chanina, representing Rabbi, said to them, Omar Lohem, Kach mekublani mi Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, Shomer Mishom Aviv. Thusly, I have as a tradition. Kol Arotzos, Isa l'Eretz Yisrael, V'Eretz Yisrael, Isa l'Bovel. That Eretz Yisrael remains like dough, the pure mixed together with the impure, relative to Bovel, which represents total purity.
Bimei Rabbi Pinchas, Bikshu Lasois, Bovel, Esau, Leret Israel. And you notice the same thing happened, and that's why we have these markings to show you the repeating fact, the repeating element. Omar Lohem Lavodov, Rabbi Pinchas said to his servants. Now, Rabbi Pinchas, as you'll see, was going to challenge what the others wanted to do. They wanted to declare Bovel Esau relative to Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Pinchas said to his slaves, "Kishani oimer shnei dvorim beveis hamedrash." When I say the two following things in the base medrash, Rashi points out that he was an elderly man and he could not himself run. So he says to his servants, as soon as I finish saying the following two things in the base medrash in the Torah study hall, Taluni Barisa Verotsu, take me in the Arisa. The Arisa is a litter. A person would sit in this thing, and it had poles to it, and people would carry the individual. So, take me in the Arisa and run. Ki Ayel Omar Lehem. When Rabbi Pinchas entered the base medrash, he said the following. Number one, Omar, he said, Ein Shechita L'Of Min HaTorah. From the Torah perspective, as opposed to rabbinic perspective, from the Torah standpoint, kosher birds, do not need to be slaughtered. Just like we don't slaughter fish, you don't have to slaughter a bird on a Torah level. Rabbinically, yes, but on a Torah level, not necessary. Adiyosev ukainibo. Now that statement was something that raised eyebrows. Many had the impression that you need to shecht a bird, you need to slaughter a bird if from the Torah. So Rabbi Pinchas deliberately did not tell them the basis of this opinion of Ein Shechita L'Of Min HaTorah. So they, while they were sitting looking into it, he then said the second thing, which is really what his plan was to get the following across. Omar Lahu, he told the people there, Kol Arotzos Yisrael Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael Yisrael Bovel. And Eretz Yisrael is, relatively speaking, impure relative to Bovel. And Notluhu Barisa Varotzu, then his slave servants took him, Rabbi Pinchas, in the litter and ran. Rotzu Achra Velohigihu. The others ran after him. They wanted to protest, and they didn't reach him. Yoshvu Ubodku, they sat and analyzed and studied the families of Eretz Yisrael to see whether or not he, Rabbi Pinchas, was correct. Achigu l'sakona, until they got to a point literally of danger, because they discovered that these Eretz Yisrael families included people that were puzzle, but they were also families that were strong-armed. Mobsters or mafia type families that controlled a lot of power. Rashi calls them Anshei Zroa, and Upirshu, and those that were challenging Rabbi Pinchas, they desisted from their attempts to say otherwise. They realized that amongst the families of Eretz Yisrael, there were in fact families with the mamzerus and other problems that were mixed into their respective backgrounds, and it's not worth revealing it because of the danger that would present to those who would reveal it. As we said, those families included some strong-armed individuals. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Heichola biyodeinu hi. Now, hey, this is an expression. Literally, the Heichol is a reference to the Beis Hamikdash. It's a Loshon Shavua. It's an expression of an oath. He says, by golly, it's in our hands to reveal the posel families of Eretz Yisrael. Avo ma'ase, what am I to do? Sharei gedolei hador nitme'u ba. Now, the term gedolei hador doesn't necessarily mean the great Torah scholar families, but it means important leading families have mixed in with them psulim, those that are unfit, like Mamzerim or Avodim, and Savar Law Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yochanan took the approach of Rabbi Yitzchak, Yom Rabbi Yitzchak, Mishpacha Shenit Me'ah, Nit Me'ah. This you'll notice we have an arrow pointing to, or to be aligned with the arrow above where Rabbi Yitzchak said that the Almighty did a favor to the Jewish people and says that any family that has psulim that are absorbed within it but and are not clearly discernible, let it remain like that. Don't bring to the fore problems that aren't that are not currently known. Don't expose problems. Omar Abaye, Af Anan Nami Tanina. We have a Tanaic source that bears this out, that Mishpacha Shinitma Nitma'a, Mishpachas Beis Hatzrifa Hoysa Bevra Yardain. There was a family that was called Beis Hatzrifa, family name, that was in Transjordan, the Richako Ben Sion Bizroa. And Ben Sion is some type of important, strong official. His word carried the day. So he declared this family, Beit Srifa, as being psulim. He distanced them, he pushed them away with force. There was another family that was assumed to be posel, and this Ben Sion drew them near with force. Kagon Elu, Elio ba litame ulitaher, l'rachek ulikarev, k'gonelu diyadin. These kinds of families where the problem is known, they're known to be problematic families. So Elio, in the future, when he comes, he will declare unfit those that need to be declared thusly, and he will declare fit that those that really are fit. He will distance, draw near, as is necessary. However, avo mishpacha shenit ma'ah nit ma'ah, but a family where there's no known problem, families where there may be problems, but they're absorbed within the families, and they're not discernible to the general public. Elio will not change their status of acceptability. There's a Rashi that you'll see further down on the in the narrow lines. De Yodin, we said in the source, Kagonelu de Yodin, Shehakol Machzikim Oysam Bepsulim. Those that are assumed to be posel, unfit, and Shenis Karvu Bizra, they were drawn near into the community, but by force. But we know they're problematic, so Elio will distance them. But those families, as we said, that are not known to be problematic, Elio is not going to come and expose them. Tana, there is a source. The fact the word has an aleph in it, between the tuf and the nun, shouldn't confuse us. It's like the word Tana without an aleph at that point. It represents a Tanaic source, and it says, Oida Cheres Hoysa, there was another family besides that which Ben Sion drew near, Velo Rotsu Chachomim Legalosa, and the Chomim did not want to reveal it, Avol Chachomim Moisim Oisei Livneim Lutamideim Pamachas B'Shavua Ve'amrilo Pa'amayim B'Shavua. However, the rabbis would pass on to their children and their students which family that was. As I say, it's a family that has a genealogical problems, but they didn't want to publicize it. But nevertheless, as far as their own students and children, they wanted them to steer clear of them, not to marry into them, into this family. And the source tells us that the rabbis would reveal this information once every 7 years. That's a Shavua, is a period of time of 7 years. And it's associated with the, we'll say, the sabbatical cycle, a series of 7 years. And some versions have it twice every 7 years. Omar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Mistabro Kemand Omar Pam Achas B'Shavua. It's most likely that it was revealed once every 7 years. Less frequent. Kedisanya, Hareini Nozir Imlo Agale Mishpochis. A person declares that he will be a Nazir if he does not expose families, expose problematic families. We say to a person that accepts Nazirus with that condition, that which basically states that if he would expose families, so he won't be a Nazir. So we tell this person who makes such a declaration, yeah, Nazir v'lo yigale mishpoch, is better to be a Nazir and don't expose that which is not already known. So we see there's an effort on the part of the halacha to reduce exposure, so that if it's a question of revealing, making a revelation, albeit an internal, quiet type revelation, but once or twice every 7 years, it's most likely that you would do it once every 7 years and not twice, as this source indicates. Now, we didn't explain, but now is the time. We have encountered a diamond, Avo Chacham Moisrin, and we have this dashed underline marking. The reason for it is that you notice another one of these, another diamond, where you see again the expression Chacham Moisrim, but you'll notice it's all within a bracketed section of Gemara, and that's because this whole bracketed section has nothing to do with matters of genealogy, no obvious connection to matters of genealogy. The reason this sugya, this bracketed section is quoted, is because of this phenomenon of something that the Chachamim would quietly reveal, and the two opinions either once or twice every 7 years, and you have again Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok applying ruling that it's more likely to reduce the level of frequency of revelation. So hence, because this has nothing to do with matters of genealogy, that's why we put this section in brackets. It's not here really for skipping purposes. There's not a question of the need to maintain a logical flow of ideas. However, after the bracketed section, the Gemara does return to matters of genealogy. So that having been said, and recognizing that we're now going to deal with a totally unrelated topic, the topic of the ineffable name of the Almighty, we pronounce God's name using the adnus form, Baruch Atah, and then we Ado, and then we say the word. We abstain from saying it, even though it's not the ineffable name, but nevertheless we treat it with great respect. And outside the context of actual prayer and blessings and recitation of verses, so we don't pronounce even the adnus word. Nevertheless, that's the way we pronounce God's name. However, there are holier forms, both in terms of spelling and pronunciation, that a tradition, but a private tradition, I might say, it's not something known to the public, but a tradition existed, and it was passed down from generation to generation, but in a very quiet fashion. In addition to the diamond marking, we have another marking, and we have a crown shape. And on the side of the Gemara, the crown shape highlights Mispar Oisyos B'Shemes Hashem Ashonim, the number of letters in different names of God. The issue of names of God is something that's of an extremely holy nature. It's an area that's often studied as part of, we'll call, the Kabbalah literature, the mystical writings. And many scholars have devoted their lives to the study of this topic, have written tomes of literature on this topic. The Gemara presents it in a very general fashion, and the names of the Almighty, it might be said, represent, amongst other things, represent different attributes of the Almighty. Exactly what that's a reference to is far beyond the realm of our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shurim, but it's important to be aware that that analysis exists. So when you look at our Gemara, you notice the numbers that are highlighted, Arba, next Shtemisre, 12, and next Arboim Ushtaim, 42. There's a Rashi in Maseches Sukkah, if I'm not mistaken, that makes reference to a 72-letter name of the Almighty as well. So we've highlighted in our Gemara three different names, number-wise. The topic heading is written on the side. Inyonim hakshurim lemesira shemas Hashem midor ledor. Matters that are related to this issue of maintaining the tradition of God's name from generation to generation. Now we turn to the Gemara itself. Omar, the bracketed section, Omar Rabo Bar Chana Om Rabbi Yochanan. And we also have a long marking indicating simply Shem Hashem. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Shem Ben Arba Isyos, the four-letter name of the Almighty. This is the name that you often see spelled. It's with a Yud, a He, and a Vav, and it's followed finally with a He, those four letters. That name, Chachomim Moisim Oisei L'Talmideim Pam Achas B'Shavua V'Amilo Pamayim B'Shavua. The actual, or the secret true pronunciation of that is revealed by the scholars, by those who really know things, to their students once, and some versions say twice, every 7 years. Here, by the way, in contrast to the Chachomim Mosrim before, there we had Livneim Ulitalmideim. Here it just says Litalmideim, to their students. Amar Rav Nami, so Mistabro Kimandi Omar Pam Achas Bishu. It's most likely that it was revealed only once every 7 years. In other words, the attempt to limit, not twice, but rather only once every 7 years. Dichtiv Zeshmi Le'olam Le'elam Ksiv. When you read this pasuk in Shmos Paragimel, Zeshmi, we read it Zeshmi Le'olam, but the Torah doesn't have vowelization, so the word Le'olam, spelled without a vav, also can be read Le'elam. Le'herlim is to hide. This is my name, but it shall remain hidden. So that's Le'elem Ksiv. It's written, the Torah writes, when referring to God's name, it's a name, this is my name, but it's to be hidden, so that you would reveal it less often. Rava Sarval Midrashay B'Pirkei. Rava, on one occasion, had an intention to reveal it publicly. Amaleahu Saba, there was an elder sage there, and he said, Le'elem Ksiv. What are you doing revealing this in public? It says in the Pasuk, keep it hidden. Rabbi Avina raises the following seeming contradiction or inconsistency in the Pesukim. Ksiv, on the one hand, it says Zeshmi, Uksiv Zechri. Rashi, in the lower part of the narrow line, says Ksiv Zeshmi, Ksiv Zechri, Medelo Ksiv Shmi Uzechri. Mashmash Shelomdu Shnei Shemus V'omar lo, ze shmi miyuchad, ubaze hasheni ani nizkar. So one indicates this is my special name, and the other is this is my pronunciation. Omar HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Lo kishani nichtav ani nikra. Not the way I'm spelled. The spelling, if you were to, phoneticize or pronounce the letters as they appear, so you would come out with something, but God says, not the way I am written, I am pronounced. Ani nikra. Nichtav, ani biyud, and a hey. But and the other two letters, vav and hey. The Gemara uses an abbreviated version of it. So I'm written with those four letters. V'nikra be'aleph dalad. Here too, it's abbreviated. Aleph dalad, nun yud, which is the way we pronounce God's name when we pray and when we say blessings. So that is the common pronunciation of God's name, which doesn't match the way it's spelled. The reading, the actual reading of the way God's name is spelled is left as a type of secret, and it's that which was revealed by the sages to their students once every 7 years, and hence we have this distinction between Zeh Shmi, that's the way it's spelled, but don't pronounce it like the letters you see. I'm telling you there's another way to pronounce it with the Aleph Dalet, the Agnus fashion. Tonu Rabbonon. Barishono Shem Ben Shtemes Re'oisius Hoyu Moistrim Oisei L'chol Odom. In the early generations, the 12-letter name of God was given to all people, Mishirabu HaPritzim, when the inconsiderate, the Pritzim are the loose ones, the foul individuals that would use God's name. The pronouncing of God's name could have actual effects, and I dare say even physical effects could result from the pronunciation of physical outcomes could result from the pronunciation of God's name. And when people would use God's name improperly, without any let's say concerns for holy causes, so Hayu Moisim Moisim Litznuim Shibekahuna, they decided that the sages decided it would be revealed only to the pious ones of the priesthood of the Kohanim, to use it in the bracha the Birkas Kohanim that was done in the Beis Hamikdash after the morning sacrifice, the Tomet Shel Shachar. Vatznim Shibekuna Mavli'im Oisoi B'ne'imas Acheim HaKohanim. As we just indicated, it was not tradition and how to pronounce this 12-letter name was then curtailed and limited to the Tznuim Shebekuna, the pious ones, literally the humble ones, the modest ones, but it's a reference to the pious ones of the Kahuna, and they would recite it. They continued the tradition of reciting it, but only while their colleagues, their Koyanim brethren were saying the Birkas Kohanim with the B'ni'imas. Nimas Achem is a type of tune with a musical recitation of the priestly blessing. So while the other Kohanim were reciting the Birkas Kohanim in a musical fashion, they, the Tznuim Shebekuna, would recite the actual name so that people around wouldn't hear it, because it would be mixed in with the their pronunciation would be mixed in with the songful recitation of the Birkas Kohanim of the other Kohanim. The Gemara continues. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Tarfon. The Brisa tells us a little story about Rabbi Tarfon tells us, Pamacha Solisi Acharachi Miladuchan. Rabbi Tarfon himself was a Kohen. His mother was from a Kohen family, so Rabbi Tarfon would ascend in the Beis HaMikdash, the platform on which the Kohanim stood for Birkas Kohanim, and Vehitesi Osni Eitzel Kohen Godol, and I literally tilted my ear, I strained to hear the high priest, V'shamati Shivli Hashem V'nimas Echov HaKohanim, and I heard him recite the ineffable name while the other Kohanim were singing the Kohen blessing. Omar Vyuda, Omar Rav, Shem ben Arboim Ushtaim Oiseis, the 42 letter name of Hashem. We made reference before to the Gemara and Sukkah. Actually, Rashi and Sukkah, Daf Mem Heyom and Aleph, Dibra Masa Nivaho, we made a little starred note on the side that where you can find that. There's a reference to a 42 letter name. Ein Moishenos Elamishet Sanua Vionov, someone who is modest and is humble, Vioimid Bechatziyomov, and has reached a half life. He's not a youth anymore. Vieno Yikoyes, he does not bear wrath. Vieno Mishtakir, he does not become intoxicated. Vieno Mamin Amidoisov, and he doesn't stand on principle in terms of if someone wronged him, so he wouldn't bear a grudge. So someone like that, someone has that forgiving nature about him, would be eligible, has the qualifications for receiving this holy tradition and how to pronounce the 42 letter name. V'chol hayodo v'hazoyer bo v'mishamro b'tarop, anyone who knows it and is careful and guards it in purity. So Ohuv Lamala Venechmod Lamato, he is beloved above in the heavens, and he is desirable below amongst people, the Muslim Mutelos Labrios, and he casts a certain sense of fear or awe on his surroundings. Venechoshne Olomim Oilam Azev Oilam Habo, and he inherits this world and the world to come. Rashi adds, interestingly, second line from the bottom, Rashi says, Ve'enu Mamin al Midosav, why it's important for someone to have this characteristic of to be not Mamin al Midosav, and I say not inflexible, Lintor Eva, to bear a sense of anger and vengefulness. Why? Because if he has that characteristic and he knows this holy name, Shem Yishtamish Bolinok, he might use the holy name to take vengeance. And we don't want that to be. I would add my own thinking on this is that when we speak about the use of the holy name in a vengeful fashion would be totally improper. That's, of course, when you're dealing with some type of, let's say, personal wronging, where a person, someone, you were about to park your car, and you were all in position to do it, and someone came up from behind and quickly took your parking spot. So we're afraid that someone who has a vengeful or a begrudging nature would use the ineffable name to punish the individual who took his parking space. That we want to avoid. However, you might find cases in our traditional sources where the pronunciation of God's ineffable name was, in fact, used to punish individuals, to take revenge, but you'll notice that it will have to have been in some type of under circumstances where there was the need to preserve the Torah, preserve the mitzvahs, to preserve a tradition, and a person who was breaking tradition needed to be punished, and the ineffable name was used. So in cases like that, where you're dealing with a sense of retribution and vengeance for a holy nature, that already may very well be a different story. But what we're referring to here is people have this begrudging personal nature. People like that would not be qualified to receive the tradition of God's ineffable name. Omar Shmuel, Mishmei Desaba. Here we go back to matters of genealogy and pedigree. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading, Gimel Leizorim Legabi Chezkosim Be'inyan Yuchasim. Three areas, land areas, Bovel, Shar HaRotzes, Eretz Yisrael, regarding matters of genealogy. So Shmuel quotes the name of a Saba, an old man, an elderly sage. Bovel Bechezkas Kshero Emedes. Families from Bovel have an assumed status of acceptance. Achi Vodaloch Bame Nipsala, until you discover some actual problem. So that you don't have to, if it's a matter of a suggested marriage to you with someone from Bovel, you don't have to investigate that family. You don't have to investigate it to check out, to make sure that it has pure pedigree and doesn't have problems of mamzerus or other kinds of disqualifying factors in its background. Shar HaRotzes, families from other nations, from other land areas, Becheskas Posel Hein Omdos, you automatically assume them to be problematic. Ad Shivodach Bama Nishra, until you investigate and find out and reveal that in fact they have a pure family lineage. Eretz Yisrael, with regard to families from Eretz Yisrael, Muchsik Posel Posel, Muchsik Lekosher Kosher. Here it's not something that's dependent on a land region, but rather it's dependent on the family reputation. If it's a family that's reputed to be of pure background, and they happen to come from Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to assume any problems. However, families that come from Eretz Yisrael that have a cheskas psul to them, you're going to have to, if you're going to accept marriage with such a family, you'd have to investigate to reveal that they're really not psul, but you will assume psul. That's as far as a translation is concerned. However, the Gemara raises a problem, because when describing Eretz Yisrael, you stated two scenarios. One having a status of definite disqualification, and the other one of definite purity. What about a third situation where there isn't any known status? It's called stam. It's, we'll say, the parava status. Ha gufa kashya. This description of Eretz Yisrael has within it an inherent contradiction. Amris muksuk l'posel posel. Say, if it has the status of being disqualified, so it's considered disqualified. Ha stam kosher. But without any stated or specific known status, you can assume it's kosher. V'hadar tani, and then you taught muksuk l'kosher kosher. Ha stam posel. Notice the dashed underlining. You see that there is a contradiction on the stam level, on the undefined, the neutral level. Are families that have no defined status, are they kosher or posel? Amar Rav Huna bar Tachlifa Mishmei Derav Lo Kasha. Rav Huna says there's no contradiction here. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Kan lahasi o isha, kan lahotzi isha miyado. When it comes to lahasi o isha, and you have a, let's say you want to marry a woman from Eretz Yisrael, and the woman comes from a family that doesn't have a known status, it's parava, it's stam, nishtahin nishtaher, it's not here nor there, then you have to check it out. That's the stam
that we inferred stam as pusel. Now, if I say stam is pusel and you want to marry them, you had better check it out. The other situation, stam kosher, is a case where a couple is married. A man married, he's already married to a woman from Eretz Israel. Are we going to separate them on the grounds that she's a mamzeres? No. We're going to say stam kosher. And not separate them. So once they're already married, in order to separate them, it would not be enough that she is simply stam. That comes from a family without any definite status of purity. Omar Rav Yosef on the Omar Rav Yosef kol shesichosoi kebavel masin lo isha. A man comes forward from who speaks. Sichoso, his speech is like that of people from Bovel. Rashi says shemesapir beloshen anshi Bovel. He speaks in the language of the Babylonian community. So Rav Yosef says anyone who speaks in the language of the Babylonian community, we will marry a woman to him, making the assumption that he is kosher. For idno diko ramoy, nowadays that there are tricksters, there are underhanded folks, and they, even if they're not kosher, their practice was to study, to learn the Bovel language, the Bovel style of speech, to pass themselves off as being kosher. Chayshinan, we practice, let's say, suspicion. We will be suspect, even though they speak the language of Bovel, which at one time was your ticket to purity, not so anymore because of the Ramoim, the tricksters. You'll notice that we have some long markings along the side of the Gemara, and we've entitled them Maisa. Basically, two stories that have a considerable amount of length to them. So the first story, on the side of the Gemara, we have a title heading. Here we call this a Maisa. And we've written, Ziri Shoyo Mi Bovel. Ziri, a Torah scholar from Bovel. Bovel being the land of the pure pedigree. Mitchamek Mi Rabbi Yochanan. He tries to avoid Rabbi Yochanan. Shehoya Mi Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan was from Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael, we said, was compared to Esau, dough, relative to Bovel, dough being a mixture, less purity of pedigree. Ziri was avoiding Rabbi Yochanan, who was from Eretz Yisrael. Why? Rabbi Yochanan wanted to take Ziri as a son-in-law. Rabbi Yochanan wanted to marry his daughter off to Ziri, and Ziri was hesitant, was avoiding it. Why? Because of pedigree considerations. Now the Gemara. Ziri aveko mishtamet minei de Rabbi Yochanan. Mishtamet is a word alluding to avoiding. He was avoiding Rabbi Yochanan. Why? Davi omar lei. Rabbi Yochanan would tell Ziri, Nosif barti, I want you to marry my daughter. Yumachat have a koazli burcha. One day they were walking along, Ziri and Rabbi Yochanan, motu leur kemo demayo, and they reached a pool of water along the road. The road, in other words, you'd have to wade through the water to get to the other side to continue on the road. Arkeve le Rabbi Yochanan akasve v'komavale Ziri. Put Rabbi Yochanan on his shoulders and carried him across. Omar lay Rabbi Yochanan, and now we have a long marking in the on the other side of the Gemara text. We call it Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan speaks now for the next few lines. Omar lay Rabbi Yochanan says, "Oy raison kshera, binsin lo ksheran. Our Torah is kosher." In other words, you come from Bovel to Eretz Israel to seek out my Torah learning, so that
apparently, my Torah is kosher. And my daughter is not kosher. My daita, what's your consideration that you consider Bavel as being super duper, really pure? What's your consideration? If you're basing yourself on the following Mishnah, our opening Mishnah of the Perek Asor, Yuchsin Olu Mi Bavel Kone Levi, that from Bavel there departed 10 different, genealogical divisions, and you think that upon the departure from Bavel, the Jews that departed, they took with them all of the psulim, and leaving Bavel pure, and us in Eretz Israel having the impure mixed in. Atu kahanim v'Yisrael kulu sliku. Do you think that all the kahanim, levim, and Yisraelim left? In other words, the Mishnah says that 10 different groups of pedigree, if you will, there's the pure and the impure, left Bavel, and included in the 10 groups were the Kehanim, Levim. So, and it's true, it goes on to say Mamzerim and Nesinim and Avodim, all the other problematic groups. Are you thinking that all the problematic people left because of that Mishnah? Well, if you're going to say that, that means all the Kehanim, Levim, Israel also left. Do you think they all left? There are no Jews left in Bavel. Ki hechi dishtayer mehani, just like there remained in Bavel the Kehanim, Levim, and Yisraelim, those of pure lineage, ishtayer nami mehani, there were psulim that remained behind in Bavel also. So why do you have your, why do you have this attitude of superiority, if you will, in terms of purity of lineage, when Bavel itself still has the impure mixed in? The problem with what Rabbi Yochanan says is explained as the Gemara goes on. Ishtamitze, remember we had the word before, mishtamit, on the fourth line from the top, that was an expression of avoiding. It also can mean escaping, leaving. So their escape from Rabbi Yochanan's awareness, or you could say Rabbi Yochanan forgot, ha d'yomer Rabbi Elazar, that which Rabbi Elazar teaches, lo ola Ezra mi Bavel ad shasa keselis nekiyav ola. Ezra did not leave Bavel until he made sure that whoever remained behind was of pure lineage. So that your reading of the Mishnah is not, that means Rabbi Yochanan's reading of the Mishnah is not really accurate. That when it says in the Mishnah, Asor Yuchsin Olam Mibavel, when it comes to those that are impure, that are mentioned in that Mishnah, the Mamzerim and the Nesinim, the Avodim, the Asufis and the Baduki and the Shtukis, all of those, in fact, Ezra did clear out of Bavel. The Kehanim, Levim, Yisraelim, so okay, he didn't clear all of them out. They remained behind. But only they remained behind. Bavel was left pure. Like Zeiri had envisioned, had understood. That's the end of that particular story. So you are left with the feeling from this particular story that Ziri was justified in his avoidance of Rabbi Yochanan and his pressure to marry his daughter. Now we have another maisa. This is a longer maisa. Ula ikla lepubadisa lebei Rav Yehuda. Ula visited Pubadisa. We had in our previous year, Pubadisa was Rav Yehuda's town. Chazei the Rav Yitzchak Brei the Rav Yehuda the God of Alonosif, and Ula noticed that the son of Rav Yehuda, his name was Rav Yitzchak, was Godal. He grew. He was reached the age and still was unmarried. Amar Le, my time alo komansiv le mor itzolivrei. Ula raised his concern. Why have you not married a daughter, a woman to your son? Amar Le. Mi yodana mehecho ansiv How do I know which woman is of pure pedigree? In other words, I have a hard time finding a suitable woman in terms of pureness of genealogy. Omar lay. Now we have here a long marking. Take note of the long ula marking in the space to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. Ula holds forth, and in the course of ula's speech, there's a subsection of his words that you can see. We have two triangles. The triangles are part of, we have it featured under the Mivneh heading, highlighting the word Dilma, Tguvas Ula L'chashoshes Rabbi Yehuda B'inyin Psulei Yuchsim. These are Ula's reactions, responses to Rabbi Yehuda's raised suspicions. The second triangle, the Dilma there, is itself a long idea. So it's all part of Ula's speech, but we want you to realize that the second Dilma is itself one long statement. So we have markings that indicate the length of these points. So now Ula says to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, who expressed his hesitation, Omar Le, Ula says, Otu anan mi adinon mehecha ko asino. Do you think we know where we come from? We're Jews, and we have many, many hundreds of years of Jews that preceded us. We have we are the descendants of, and descendants of whom exactly? Dilma mehanoch tichsiv. Maybe we're the descendants of those that are described in the following pasuk in the Book of Lamentations and in Megillas Eicha, and it says there, Noshim b'tzion inu b'sulos bari Yehuda. When the idol worshippers, Gentiles, plundered Jerusalem, it says that they came and they raped our virgin women. All kinds of Gentiles and idol worshippers raping our foremothers, our original, ancestors. You might say, okay, so what? Even if Gentiles did rape our ancestor mothers, an idol worshiper or a slave that has intimacy and impregnates a Jewish woman, the child is kosher. So even if our great-great-great grandmothers were those that were raped during the time of the destruction of the temple, were impregnated by goyim, by Gentiles and slaves, we're kosher. Ah, but the Ula says there still is a problem. V'dilma mehanach tichtiv b'hu. Maybe we are descendants from those that another pasuk describes. Pasuk in the book of by the Novi Amos, hashoichim al mitois shein usruchim al arisoisam. This pasuk is interpreted initially by Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. However, we're really, we'll say, aiming for Rabbi Avos' interpretation that you'll see is appears as number two in the second wide line. And when we get to Rabbi Avos, he says that this pasuk is describing what in recent decades has been referred to in English by the term wife swapping. Married women who are exchanged by their husbands without any formal divorce. Just men saying, you take my wife, spend the evening with my wife, and I'll take your wife, and I'll spend the evening with her. And who knows? You know, you have, that's called Eishes Ish. There's a serious, a catastrophic level of problem of immorality, and the resultant children from this kind of adulterous relationship, even if it's with the approvals of the husband, so what? They're still married women, aren't they? Those children are mamzerim. And this is a pasuk in Amos, in the prophet Amos, who preceded us by many hundreds of years. Maybe we're the descendants of those people, making us mamzerim. So, what, you're all concerned about your about finding the right woman for your son? Do you think we know where we come from? Are we so uppity up? Now, that having been said, we laid out the Gemara structure. Let's go over the entire Gemara with first Rabbi Yossi's explanation of the pasuk. But as you'll see, the Gemara quickly rejects his approach. So we read a pasuk, and notice we have that long Dilma marking. That's why we have it here, because Ula, in raising this possible problem for our own identity, is brought to the fore only later when you get to Rabbi Avo. So let's continue with the Gemara. Ulas continues saying, maybe we're from these psukim, maybe we are descendants of those that are described in Amos. This pasuk who describes it, you know, literally, it has to do with people that lie on their beds, lie on their ivory beds, and smell a disgusting smell on their mattresses. So Rabbi Yossi says these are people that are elu bnei adam hamashtinim mayim b'fnei mitosim arumim. These are people that stand in front of their beds unclothed and urinate. Umegadif bo Rabbi Avo, and Rabbi Avo, he ridicules, he curses this explanation of the pasuk. Iachi, if this is correct, that the prophet is describing people who urinate while unclothed in front of their beds. Hainu dichtiv, does that justify the continuation of the verse where it says lochein arto yiglu barosh goylim, and therefore you are now going to be sent into exile? Mishom demashtime mayim b'fnei mitosim arumim yiglu barosh goylim, because people have this weird practice of urinating while unclothed in front of their beds. That's an offense that warrants being sent into exile. Maybe it's a violation of the local health code, lack of good sense, improper hygiene, or whatever, but that's not grounds for being sent into exile. El Om Rabbi Avo, Elu B'nei Adam, the Pasuk is referring to people, She'ichlin V'sheisim Zeim Zeh, they eat and drink together with one another, they're very sociable people, they're socialites. Umad Bikin Mita Zeim Zeh Bezu, and they cleave their beds one next to the other. Umachlifin Ishisem Zemizan, they exchange their wives one with the other. Umasrichin Aros Arisoisam, and their beds Arisoisam, their beds, their mattresses become foul, Beshikva Zera Sheno Shelahem, with male seed, with semen that's not theirs. Sort of, Mr. A's wife is involved with intimacy with Mr. B, so eventually Mrs. A has the zera, has the seed of Mr. B within her, and when Mrs. A comes back to Mr. A, so there on Mr. A's bed is zera she'eino shelohem, it's Mr. B's zera. That is the height of immorality. And I might just say editorially, depravity and foulness and immorality is not something that is of only recent vintage. It is something that has existed from almost the beginning of time. Torah is essentially the antidote to that kind of social disorder and debauchery. And we can say that with a great sense of confidence, though the Torah is a book that has been amongst us for thousands of years, so too this kind of immoral social lifestyle has also been around even longer. So the Torah certainly is capable of addressing something that it was quite familiar with. So Ullah is making his point that maybe we're descendants of all that, of immoral ancestors, and we're not so pure. Amarle hechi navit. So after Rabbi Yehuda hears Ullah's argument, so he says, so what should I do? How do I make a decision? I want to marry a proper woman for my son. Amarle zeal boser shtikusa. You know how to solve your problem? Follow silence. Rashi on the side, we have a topic heading. Hasheisek b'shas meriva, when two parties are striving, are arguing at odds with one another, and that's called shas meriva, the time of argument. So one who remains silent, one who maybe they're arguing, but one who's first to assume silence, simin shum yuchas, that's a sign that he is of pure pedigree. The ability to know how to withdraw from argument. We're not talking here, obviously, of argument over Torah matters. We're talking about common social discord and strife. And one who knows how to withdraw from that and remain silent or assume silence first, that's a sign of his pureness. So Ullah says, do follow that. Use the, we'll call the silence test. Ki hai debatki b'nei marova. The b'nei Eretz Yisrael would test for purity as follows. Ki minsu b'etre b'abi adodim, when two were arguing with one another. Chazu hei minayu dekodim b'shosik. Which one would be the first, kodim, to go ahead, to be the first to assume silence. Amri, so b'nei marova would say, hai miyuchas tfei, he is more pure, he has a finer pedigree. Omar Rav, shtikuse de bovel hainu yichusa. The silence of bovel is its sign of pureness. Does Rav really hold that we test purity by silence? Veho ikla Rav. Rava came ubodak behu, and he checked them out. Now this could be there's a girsa that removes a name from the text. Rav, his origin, as you can see from the end of Maseches Yuma, he started off in Eretz Yisrael, but he was under forced circumstances, or almost forced circumstances, left Eretz Yisrael to go to Bovel. So when he arrived, it could be a reference to that period when he arrived in Bovel, he would check them out. My lav b'yichusa, he would check out their actual lineage. Lo, that's not what it means. When it says that Rav checked out, he checked out b'shtikusa, hochi k'amar lehu. Thusly he said to them, b'doku, check out, ishaski, ilo shaski, see who knows how to either remain silent or assume silence before the other one. As we go on in the Gemara, a new marking appears, and under the Mivneh, the structural note, the diamond highlights the expression im ra'isa, as if you see, and following that we have a dashed underline, shnei b'nei Adam, later shnei mishpachos, that are misgarin, misgaroi zu bazu, that they're striving, they cannot get along, they fight with one another. So, Omar of Yudam Arav, Imro Isa Shnei B'nei Odom Shemizgarim Zebo Zeb. If you see two people that they're always feuding with one another, Shemetz Posel Yesh Be'echod Mehem, there's Shemetz Posel is a reference to there's some kind of impurity that is present amongst them. In other words, one of these two people is of impure pedigree. And the feuding is actually a protective measure. Ve'ein manichin oisoi lidobek echod bechavero. This shemetz posel, this impure pedigree, is preventing them from, literally, from sticking one to get one to the other. Because they're feuding all the time, and as we say, that feuding is simply a symptom of some kind of impureness. So naturally, one will not end up marrying one will not marry from the other. In other words, you have two men, and they're always feuding with another. One has a son, the other has a daughter. That son and daughter will not marry one another. And that's because one of them has this shemetz psul, this impureness of pedigree in their background. Omar, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, im ro'isa shtei mishpochos ha'mezgara zu bezu, if you see two families always feuding with one another, shemetz psul yesh ba'achas man, ve'im manichem oisa lidobek v'chaverto, just as we explained before. Omar of Papa Sabov, mishmei derav. Rav Papa, in the name of Rav, says, or he lists a number of different nations and describes in figurative language their different levels of impurity. The nations that are presented here are not order of descending level, but rather the first two are actually two extremes. On the side of the Gemara, we have Tat Nosei, means a subtopic heading. Dalet Arots is four countries, the Dirugam, and their level, their classification, Legabi Ramat Yichusam, regarding their level of pureness. So it was said then in the name of Rav, in the Gemara we see Bovel Bria, Meshon Misa. The names and the descriptions actually sound like one another. Bovel, also beginning with a bays, Bria, is healthy, meaning Bovel is of pure pedigree. Meshon, Messine in English renditions, is a country, Misa, it's dead, meaning that it's a place that is fraught with problems of genealogy, where the whole place is one big mess. Modai chayla elam geisesis. Modai is described as sick. Elam, in the throes of death. Uma bein chaylin legeisesis. And what's the difference between these two descriptions? They both sound pretty horrible. So the difference is roiv chaylin lechayim. Here we're referring to the analogy with halachic ramifications in other areas of halacha, and in other areas of halacha we apply the principle that if you, let us say, last saw a person while ill, do you assume he's still alive? So we say roiv chayim l'chayim. Most people who are ill recover, so they have the status of being alive. So that in looking at Modai, you would say that the majority of Modai is of acceptable, pure pedigree. Elam, on the other hand, Roiv Geisesim Lamisa. If the last time you saw the person and he was in a state of Gesisa, you can assume now that he is dead. So the majority of Elam would be considered impure. At this point, we have a slash mark in the Gemara, and on the side we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading, and indicate that this goes till Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. Before we continue with the note on the side, take a look at the notation we have to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. If you notice, we've written Shimush Ba Mapo. That means use of the map. So we have, it doesn't look like a Rand McNally cartographer's drawing of a map, but nevertheless we have, as you can see, along with this Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, and also accompanying Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, a map. So use the map if you have to scroll ahead one page, or turn your page if you have a printed edition, then do so as we go along with this sukya. The use of the map will last, in other words, will keep us, will be continuing the use of the map till Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. You'll notice where this vertical dotted line ends on the upper two fifths of Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. For throughout this Gemara, we're going to be making references to the page of maps that we have. Now we have a note on the side, the Nosei Mivne that we alluded to before. A trapezoid or volcano shape appears, and it highlights the expression Ad Heichon, until when, until where are, then we say Gvulos Bovel Legabi Yichusin. So the Ad Heichon is the expression that appears in the first trapezoid, but the rest of the trapezoids continue with that theme of until where is the boundary, and we'll explain things in a clearer fashion as we go on in the Gemara text, making references to the map. Now, the how to use the map. So you'll notice on our page, we call it our map page, if you look closely at the diagrams, you'll see letters and numbers. The letters, we've noted in our note on the side, Ha'oisis, Aleph through Hey. So if you look closely at the maps, the three maps, if you will, on our map page. So the first one has letters Aleph through Hey on it, in addition to numbers. Hamisparim 1 through 10. Shemofim Bagamora Metuamim Imamapa. So we have these letters and numbers in the Gemara text. And each time you see it in the Gemara text, you can make reference to the corresponding letter or number on the map. Now the letters are going to be used to accompany these trapezoids. So as you can see, we have these trapezoids on the bottom of our Ayin Aleph Amud Beis Gemara, and on the second line from the top of Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, we have our fifth trapezoid marked with the letter He. Before we get into the Gemara text, let us familiarize ourselves just a little bit with the map. The first map is the first diagram, the upper third of our map page is basically the main diagram. My recommendation is not to attempt to superimpose this map on any contemporary world atlases or the like. Let us use the diagram as it is, at, we'll call it face value. Our hope is that what we see in our diagram parallels that which we see in the Gemara text, making things much easier in that sense. But as far as countries that exist today, and we try to associate them with the historical locations of Bovel and Eretz Yisrael, let us not delve into that. So as we look at the map page, I hope everyone has a map page in front of them. By all means, if you need to access our marked Gemaras, including the map page, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We're going to be navigating in Mitzvah Shem through this sugya using our map page. So the first of the diagrams, the top third has the words Mizrach and Marov. Mizrach, the east, Marov, west. As we're facing our map, as you hold the map up in front of you, so the top represents the east, the bottom is Marov. To your right, you see maybe in large letters the word Dorom, the south, and to the left, Tsofon. This is a map of Bovel. Bovel being described as an area that has running in it two major rivers. One is called the Chidekel or Diglas. They're interchangeable terms. And the other, the Pras. Some people will translate these as the Pras being the Euphrates River and the Chidekel being the Tigris River. I don't know. I don't commit myself to anything of the sort. For our purposes, we have the Nahar Chidekel. You can see there's a double underline highlighting that on the map. And Nahar Pras. Between these two rivers, in English translations, you might see this referred to as Mesopotamia. Once again, we do not commit ourselves to anything of the nature. Nevertheless, it's the area between the two rivers, that land mass is referred to on the map. You can see Bein Hanoros between the rivers and the arrows. That indicates that area between the rivers is Miuchas. That has the status of what we've seen already many times in our recent Gemaras, Bovel as being pure. This is the area that was purified upon Ezra's departure. If you want to marry a person from that area between the rivers, you don't have to ask questions about their purity. That's as far as between the rivers. What the Gemara is going to be questioning again and again and again, what about the boundaries? What about the extremities? So fine, between the rivers, but how far south is that going to be the case that we say it's pure? How far east, even in other words, on the other side of the river, does purity continue on the to the Marov, to the west? Does purity continue to the west of the Pras? We mentioned already to the east of the Chidekel. In the Sugya, you will see different names, place names, and different rabbinic names with their various opinions. It's also noted on the map that Eretz Yisrael is described as south of Bovel. There's a pasuk that says, "Mitzafon tipotach hara," that the evil will open forth, will break forth from the Tzafon, and in that pasuk that we just referred to, it's a reference to Bovel. So if Bovel is in the north, and the evil befalling Israel is from Bovel, so Eretz Yisrael is therefore to the south. And that is indicated on the diagram. We're not going to be dealing with anything of a geographical nature with regard to Eretz Yisrael. Simply noted that Eretz Yisrael is described as being to the south of Bovel. Just to repeat, when you encounter the trapezoid shapes in the Gemara, we're going to be asking questions concerning the extreme boundary, up till where does the Bovel status go? Bovel being interchangeable with the idea of pureness of pedigree. Now, let us turn to the Gemara. The first of the volcano shapes, and we also have an Aleph, so try to keep one finger in the Gemara and one finger in the map. So, find the Aleph on the map. I hope you see it. It's to the east of the Chidekel River, above the line indicating the Chidekel River. Just another point before I forget, the Pras River is described as eventually flowing into the Hidekel River. And that's why you see the curved line. Much of this information you'll see is in the Rashi as well. So we are now looking at the Aleph on the map. And on the map, you see next to the Aleph, the words Ad Heichoni Bovel, Misfas HaDekel VeLechutz, from the banks, from the edge of the Dekel, outwards. Outwards means eastwards. How far does the Bovel status continue? So now we go to the Gemara. Ad Heichon Hi Bovel. How far does Bovel go? And we specified, going east of the Chidekel, how far east does the Bovel status continue? Rav Omar Ad Nahar Azak, until that place called Nahar Azak, and Ushmuel Omar Ad Nahar Yoani, a different place. The names we've recorded on the map. And we continue in the Gemara. Li'el Bediglas Ad Hecha. Li'el is a reference to south. How far south along the Diglas do we say there is the Bovel status? So now, you can, if you look for the, first of all, you see the bays. The bays that's encircled, and an arrow pointing in the south direction, down, it's the southerly direction. How far south does the Bovel status go? So, do you see number 3 on the map? So there it's Rav Omar Ad Bagda V'Avna, until these communities, Bagda and Avna. You'll notice on the map there is a little line connecting Rav with two dots and a brace. Bagda and Avna are two communities on either side of the Nahar Chidekel, on the Chidekel River, the Diglas. So the two dots are these two communities. One is Bagda, one is Avna. So up till that point, going south along the Chidekel, up till that point is Bovel. And Ushmuel, Omar, notice on the map, do you see a number 4? When you look at number 4, you see that it's further south. So, Ushmuel, Omar, Ad Mushkini, Velo Mushkini Bechlal. It means up till Mushkini, but not including Mushkini. Question. The Omar of Chiyabar Abba Omar Shmuel Mushkini Harehi Kegoyla Liuchsin. Mushkini is like Goyla. Now the term Goyla is, Rashi says, it's Pumpadisa. Pumpadisa being a city of great reputation in Bovel. So Mushkini is considered pure. Why then did the Gemara say in Shmuel's name? Here, actually, I should point out that Rav Chiyabar Bar Abba is quoting Shmuel himself. So, in quoting Shmuel, you see Shmuel says that Mushkini is a great place. Why did Shmuel say that up till Mushkini and not Mushkini included? Elo, so we correct it and make it more accurate. Ad Mushkini u Mushkini bichlal. And now on our map, you notice that we've squiggle underlined the word ad to draw your attention to that word being the subject of this discussion. Let's continue with the Gemara. Then we have a gimel. Do you see the gimel that's encircled? I hope you do. It's in the northern side of the northern extreme. And there, you see that on the map, and in our Gemara, the same words, it says, L'tachtis bediglas anhechop. Tachtis literally means the bottom. The river flowed from south to north. So it's flowing in a northerly direction. So it's so that's called the bottom. It's flowing down from south down to the north. So the extreme of Bovel in a northerly direction, Ad Hecha, until where does it extend? So now we see a 5. Do you see a 5 on the map? I hope so. So, Omar Rav Shmuel ad apamyo tato. Until, but not including the lower apamyo. I hope that is illustrated sufficiently clearly on the map. There's a bracketed section. There's a note, a starred note on the side, and let's read it together. B'sochas ha-grama, Gemara mazbira, shayu shnei apamyo, echot kosher, echot posel. The Gemara will tell us that there are actually two places by the same name, apamyo. One was kosher. One had pure pedigree in it, and the other, not so. V'she'ezor ha-miyuchas himshich ad ha-posel, v'lo ad b'chlal. The area of pure pedigree continued till the impure area continued, but not including that. So that's the subject within the bracketed section. So these brackets are not for skipping purposes, but they simply denote the extent of this subtopic concerning apamyo. So we saw right before the brackets that in a northerly direction, the extent of Bovel is until Apamya Tato, the lower Apamya, the northerly, the more northerly Apamya. And by saying the lower Apamya, you're already implying that there's an upper one. There's a more southerly Apamya. So here in the Gemara, in the brackets, Tato Apamya Havyon, there were two Apamyas. Chado Elisa, one was further up. V'chado tasyaisa, and the other was further down. When we say up and down, we can assume it's a reference to the course of the river's flow, upstream, downstream. So upstream, we said already, was further south. The more southerly you go, the further upstream you're going. So these two places, chado ksheira v'chado psula, one was of pure pedigree and the other was of impure pedigree. Ubein chado lechado parsa. The distance between these two apamios was a parsa. Parsa is a distance of 4 mil, approximately 4 kilometers between the two. The Kokapti Ahadodi, these two communities were at odds and at strained relations. The Filu Nura Lomoshni Adodi, they wouldn't even borrow a fire from one another. This, by the way, this Kapti Adodi is a throwback, in my opinion, to the diamonds we had above, where you see individuals or families that are at odds with one another, that can't get along, and that's because of the Shemitz Psul. Here it's quite obvious. Here you had a community that was filled with Psulim, so it was at the end of the day, it was a very good thing that they did not have convivial relations, that they did not coexist. To the extent, as we said, they wouldn't even borrow a match from one another. The Simonech, the Psuto, in order to identify the community that was Pusul, see, they both had the same name, so how do you know which one was Pusul? Ha de Mishtaya Mishnis. The community that spoke in the Messene language. Mishnis is the language of the people from Meshan. So that characterized the community of Psulim. We continue. Do you see the Dalid on the map, the encircled Dalid? We're looking at a point on the river. We'll say it's the western side of the Pras River. And we want to know here, on the Pras River, going south, what's the southerly extent? The El Bepras Ad Hecha, along the Pras River, what's the southerly extreme of Bovel? We had the second of the trapezoid shapes above was the southerly extreme along the Diglas River, and here we're talking about the southerly extreme along the Pras River. How far did the Bovel status go? So Rav Omar Ad Akra de Tulbakni, Ushmul Omar Ad Gishra de Bay Pras, and Rabbi Yochanan Omar Ad Mavras de Gizma. There are three opinions, and if we look together at the map, let's do that. You saw number six was Rav's opinion was until a place called Akra de Tulbakni. You saw Shmuel, he said until Gishra de Bay Pras. Gishra is a bridge. Till the bridge, that's a place also. We'll call it, it's a reference to a name of a place. And on our map, it would appear that Shmuel is extending the Bavel boundary to in a more southerly direction than Rav. And Rabbi Yochanan said until Mabras de Gizma. And we have Rabbi Yochanan noted on the map. Layit Abaye v'temer of Yosef adarav. Layit is a very harsh word indicating dissatisfaction. Some translate it as simply he cursed the opinion of Rav. He ridiculed, he laughed, he jeered, he certainly rejected Rav. On the grounds that the Yichus of Bavel doesn't extend that far. In other words, we've got Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, but to say that it goes as far as Akar de Tobakni, wow, you're stretching things too far. The Gemara asks, you're criticizing Rav, Ada Rav, Layit, Ada Shmuel, no Layit. You're ridiculing Rav and not Shmuel. Has Shmuel extended even further south. Hello? Now here's approach number one. We have two approaches to what we just said. Approach number one, Elalayan Adarab, but also got out of Shmuel. Yeah, he ridiculed Rav, and all the more so, Shmuel. Really, his criticism was that of Rav, and not that of Shmuel. We have a second diagram on the page, and the second diagram has these words as its heading. I hope you see in the middle of the map page. Layit Abaye Vitema Rav Yosef Adarav. The Rav Kol Yosef Midai Lekiven Dorm Kim Yuchos. Rav includes too far south, and we have a number nine. The number nine on the map corresponds to the Eboyas Amok that we're about to read in the Gemara. Before we go back to the Gemara, let's take a look at our map. Number 9. Do you see 9 in the middle of the page? And it says, next to that, the quote from the Eboyasim, some say, Adarav Layashmuel Olayit. Before we thought that Shmuel extended things more to a more extreme southerly position than Rav, so this opinion says, no, we're going to criticize only Rav and not Shmuel. Then Rashi on our map page, we've written it on the page. Rashi, dechi omer Shmuel lemilse poches hoyap. When Shmuel said what he said, he said gishra de bay pras. He was actually more limiting in the southerly direction. Velo mosif, not adding. Uvimei Shmuel hoya gesher lemata miakud de tubakni. In the days of Shmuel, there was a relocation of that bridge. That gesher, so that you see on the map, this in the middle of the page, you see. Do you see Rav where Akra de Tubakni? Now, you notice we also have on this map we have Dorom and Sophon. In the times of Shmuel, Gishra de Pras was further north, in other words, more limiting in as far as a southerly extreme. Who was the southerly extreme? Rav was. So that when opinion was jeered at, it was Rav that was jeered at, because he was extending things too far south. In the days of Shmuel, when he said Gishra Pras, the bridge was located where you see it on the map. Now, let's go back to the Gemara. Li'olam adarav layin ha-shmuel olayin, v'gishra de be'pras, l'tatoi havakoi. The bridge in Shmuel's time was Tatoi, down, was further downstream. We mentioned the rivers flowing from south to north, so it's further downstream. We continue the Gemara at the top of Daf Ayin Beis. For Idnuhu, nowadays, when the Gemara says nowadays, a time later than Shmuel, nowadays, who Dalyua Parsoi, the Persians relocated the bridge. They lifted it up. They positioned the bridge, this Gishra, the Bay Pras, at a more extreme southerly location. So that's why initially there was the impression that if you're jeering at Rav, you should jeer at Shmuel because Shmuel mentioned Gishra de Pras. But that's not accurate, because in Shmuel's time, Shmuel was actually a more limited extreme in a southerly direction than Rav. Only nowadays does the Gishra de Beit Pras appear to be further upstream, further south, which is upstream in this case, which is not what Shmuel intended when he spoke about the extreme southerly boundary of Bavel. The Gemara continues. Omar le Abaye le Rav Yosef. You notice we have a hay now, and the final of the trapezoid shapes. So, do you see on our maps a hay? So, on the first map, you notice, I hope you see a hay. The uppermost map, the top map, the hay. And now back in the Gemara, we're asking a question regarding west of the Pras, Laha Gisa de Pras, to the west of the Pras, Ad Hecha, how far does Bavel extend? Obviously, we're not between the rivers anymore. We're going further west of the Pras. How far does Bavel extend? Omar Lake. So, Rav Yosef says to Abai, you're asking about how far west the things go. My daitach, what's the reason for your asking? Mishum Biram, because you wanna know about Biram. That's a name of a community. Well, miyachse de Pumbedisa, mi Biram Nasfi, from the pure families of Pumbedisa, they would take mates. They would marry people from Biram. Biram was certainly a place of pure pedigree. Omer of Papa, kemachloikis liuchsin, kach machloikis liningitin. We have boundaries that we've been spending the last number of minutes on regarding how far does Bavel extend regarding purity of genealogy. In Maseches Gittin, the Gemara says that an agent that brings a get from abroad to Eretz Yisrael has to make a declaration. Befonei nechtam, befonei nechtam. That declaration is tantamount to verifying that the get was written with proper intention, with kol lishma. It's also counts as a verification of signatures. But right now, let's focus on the knowledge necessary for writing a get with proper intention. That declaration on the part of the witnesses is necessary when a get is brought from abroad to Eretz Israel, because it's assumed, it's not assumed that people outside of Eretz Israel knew the laws of get writing. That divorce documents must be written with proper lishma. Lishma means with specific intentions for that couple whose names appear in the shtar. You have to write the shtar, the get, with them in mind. When it comes to Bavel, which is also outside of Eretz Israel, in Eretz Israel, it was assumed that there was expertise regarding these matters. So agents bringing Gittin within Eretz Israel did not have to make this declaration. But agents carrying Gittin from outside Eretz Israel did, because of what we said, to verify that it was done properly. What about a get brought from Bavel? So the Gemara says that Bavel, Eretz Israel, the Gittin, that Bavel is like Eretz Israel regarding Gittin, they have expertise in Bavel as well. Well, you say about Bavel has expertise, how far do the boundaries of Bavel go that we can assume expertise? And the halachic ramifications of that are that an agent bringing a get, transporting a get from a man in Bavel to a woman in Eretz Israel, would not have to make the declaration of Befonei Nefonei Nechtam, because they are assumed to have expertise. Well, what are the boundaries? So Rav Papa says that just like we had disagreements regarding boundaries of genealogy, so too the same land demarcations will apply to defining the boundaries of Bavel and expertise of get writing regarding the matter of Gittin. The Gemara continues, V'Rav Yosef Omar Machlekes Luchsim. Yes, we have seen disagreement regarding matters of genealogy. Avol LeGittin, when it comes to how far do the boundaries of Bavel extend regarding Gittin, Divrei HaKol, everyone agrees, Ad Arba Tinyona de Gishra, only till that point. Once you define where Arba Tinyona de Gishra is, so that is the extent of Bavel regarding the assumption that they have knowledge in how to prepare Gittin. Omar Romi Bar Abba, Chovil Yoma, it's the name of a place, Chovil Yoma, Tchelta de Bavel. Chovil Yoma was an area within Bavel. Tchelta de Bavel, for our purposes, means it's the most, or the purest place of Bavel. Shunya v'guvya tchelta de Chovil Yoma. Within Chovil Yoma, there were two locations that were especially pure, Shunya and Guvya. Ravina Omar af Tzitzura, even Tzitzura, another place. Tanya Nami Hachi, and a Tanaic source that supports this, Chonan ben Pinchas Omer, Chovil Yoma tchelta de Bavel. Shunya v'guvya v'tzitzura tchelta de Chovil Yoma. Omar of Papa, for Idna, I Arvi, Behu Kusoi. And Rav Papa says, unfortunately, nowadays, the Kusoi, the Kusi people, have mixed into the population. And Kusis are people that genealogical purity is undesirable, is questionable. It's a people who years and years earlier had converted to Judaism, but under very questionable circumstances. Some will say their conversion is actually worthless. Whatever, for our purposes, they represent something of a problematic nature. So to describe Chovil Yoma or these various places being extremely pure, Rav Papa says, not so, not nowadays. Velohi, the Gemara rejects this by saying, not so, Kusoi didn't get mixed in. Itza hu debo minai velo yavule. There are two pshotim in Rashi. First we'll translate, and here we'll use a pronoun, which is something that I try to avoid at all costs in general, but here the use of the pronoun enables us to set the stage for the two pshotim in Rashi. So the first, the translation of the Gemara. The Gemara rejects what Rav Papa said. Rav Papa said that nowadays the Kusoy have mixed in, and the Gemara says not so. Itza hu debo minayo, there was a woman that he sought out, and velo yavule, he sought out from there, from Chovil Yoma, he wanted to marry a woman, and they did not give it to him. Oh, so out of protest, you're not letting me marry a wife, a woman from your place. You guys are not so pure yourselves. Who is it that raised this protest? Who is it that defamed this pure area because they wouldn't give him a wife? So let's look at Rashi. In the middle of the Rashi column, Itza Balminayo, Kusim Lonis Arvumem. The Kusis did not get mixed up in that area. Avol Hakul Yotza, the word went out, a reputation was promulgated. Al Yadei Shesha kusi echod isha mehem. There was a kusi man that sought to marry a woman from there. Avolheim lo nosnu lo. They didn't give their woman, their pure daughter to him, to the kusi. So he started promulgating these false rumors, false words, phony description of vilifying their reputation. Now, v'yesh omrim, there's another explanation that Rashi rejects or hesitates, but the Yesh Omer says Rav Papa Bominah Itzav Lavile. Rav Papa himself was sought out a wife from there, from Chavul Yoma, and they wouldn't give a wife to Rav Papa from there. Lekachoy Emotzi Aleim Shemetz Posel, and Rav Papa started to spread a false reputation about them. Vekoshe Beinai Lomar Kain. It's unimaginable. It's difficult for me to say such a pshat that a tzaddik like Rav Papa would start promulgating false rumors about a place that is simply not so. And Tosfos says the same thing. He says on the first narrow line, the Chas V'Sholom She'ale B'daitoi Shelo Yisu Tzadik Lo Tzilaz Aleim Shelo Kadin. Let's turn back to the Gemara. My Chovil Yoma, what is meant, or what is referred to by Chovil Yoma, Rav Papa Zu, Pras de Bursi. And all we can say is that was a specific location that the Gemara was able to identify. So Pras de Bursi is Chovil Yoma. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.